So
no.
The bet has been paid, and only part of the punishment has actually been witnessed here. But and a hilarious start to the morning here, with heels down the hall, clacking, and then all of a sudden, 680 Newsroom gets an apology, gets a warning, a proviso. I lost a bet, everybody. The thing is, only one person cared in the moment.
It was me.
Yes. You were apologizing for dressing up, and I don't think if you said anything, anyone would have noticed, because they were like,
Justin, they noticed. I'm wearing a full-on wedding bridesmaid dress at 6 a.m., wearing heels, clanking in a silent newsroom. They would have noticed, so I tried to get ahead of the game and said, I lost the bet. I lost the bet. And they all looked at me like, Who are you?
I only saw the look on one girl's face, and she was like, there was like a measure of disgust. Yeah. She was like, what? Why are you speaking this early? That's the thing. It's like, it's too early for people to like speak at this hour, except for us. But like, no one, everyone's kind of at their desk, just trying to wake up, trying to get the coffee into their bloodstream. And you just loudly talking about what you're wearing was a pretty hilarious start to the morning. And this is really the punishment. And the punishment for everyone who's might be listening who has no idea what we're talking about and why you're wearing a wedding dress. You are going to a wedding later, so it kind of fits.
Actually, like, luckily, kind of.
So you had to prepare the outfit anyway, but we had a bet on the World Series. I had the Astros -1.5. Of course, the Astros went in 6, cashed that bet. You've been doing progressively more fancier outfits. The idea being business casual to black tie. You're now in the black tie portion. You did your best Kamala Harris yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
You've been, you know, getting ready for job interviews between Tuesday and Wednesday, and now you've reached the formal stage. So congrats to you for, you know, living up to your end of the bargain here. The best part of it, though, is the shame. And the biggest moment of shame is yet to come when J.D. Bunkus breaks down the door here later.
Second at 8:56.
And sees you in a wedding dress at 9 a.m. is going to be very, very funny. In.
I don't even know. He's going to say, what the hell are you wearing? That's what he's going to say. And I'm going to say,
and he knows.
J.D., I know.
But he's going to say that regardless. And then he'll, you know, make fun of you for about 5 minutes. And then we'll start our weekend.
Anyway, this morning, I'm gathering the suitcase of clothes that I need to bring to work to change. Because obviously I'm not going to walk here. Justin goes, why aren't you wearing your dress when I walked in? But do you want me to walk across the snow landscape?
I mean, you got to work, you gotta wear it at some point today. Like, you're not going to change at the wedding you're going to, so.
Anyway, I was going to get pneumonia.
That's fair, though. It is fair.
So I changed here, and I was in the staff bathroom over there, and I exited, and a janitor looked at me. And it was just silence. And I looked into his eyes, and I thought, you'll never know.
It's a great bet because it's A, annoying, and B, embarrassing.
And that's really
all we're going for.
And then, yeah, the 680 newsroom. I won't be exiting this room for the next 3 hours. I don't care if I'm dehydrated and I need water or the other side of that equation. I will be grinding until 8:56 when I exit into a busy newsroom, I assume. It'll be pretty bumping at 9 a.m., and I will have to make a statement once again.
Mm-hmm. There'll be a couple conversations you might have to navigate, try to avoid. Just so that you don't have to, you know, relive this experience over and over again.
But you came in with this great... This was your idea for the bet, so kudos to you. You did a great job. And I
was thinking about myself, too. Like, I think maybe slightly unfair to you, because the punishment wouldn't be as bad for me. But I was just thinking about how...
You could just wear a suit and tie, and nobody would even notice.
Well,
blink.
It would suck to do that, too, and people would be looking at you. But I was just thinking one morning
TV
when I was, like,
or something.
Just putting on jeans, I'm like, man, it would suck to have to, like...
Yeah,
you know, if you're on TV, this would suck. Because you got to do this every morning. Like, people that do, like, morning television.
Like
they have to do
to
full
them.
Hair and makeup and everything every day.
Yeah. I had to get up a little earlier.
Men and
so
women.
I looked somewhat presentable. And I'm like, this is why we're on radio.
I couldn't even imagine doing that every day.
Someone at the Leaf game yesterday, I think they were trying to be nice. I don't know. It came out wrong. But they said, you have such a good voice for radio.
No, that's fine.
No. But there is a comment that's definitely your strong suit in terms of media or something. Like, trying to say, like, stick to your voice for radio. And I was like, oh, okay, thanks.
I feel like you...
it was worded poorly.
You have to have a lot of those conversations at the Leaf game. Like I was mentioning, you might have to dodge a couple people. like your own personal Frogger game later, trying to get to the bathroom to change. But like, I feel like you have no choice at Leaf games, but to really engage with our listeners,
chat with a lot of people. But yeah. They're really nice. Like, they come, love the show. Got a selfie with someone yesterday.
You're a minor celebrity over there.
Anyway,
you had one more encounter at the Leaf game that you're pretty excited about.
Let's start with that. I met Justin's father.
Now, your embarrassment has already been concluded. Now we have to get to my embarrassment.
I met Justin's father, who I've been, searching the bowels of Scotiabank Arena for the last 2 months. Guy's like an enigma or a ghost. He doesn't exist.
Well, there is one place that he would be every night.
Yeah, but I can't get up there. Anyway, I met the legend himself. And it was very nice. He said I was his favorite radio host.
Mm-hmm.
Ahead of you.
Right.
He was very lovely and charming and polite. And I thought, there's no way that you're not adopted.
I mean, maybe you got him on a good day, because he's not exactly like the beacon of positivity at all times. Like, he's a great guy. Good father. Of course, all
he's
those things. But especially on game days. Like, he must be he's getting a little older. I think he turned 65 this year, actually. So if
that's
you're crossing into senior citizen status, you maybe mellow out a little bit. But you normally, my father on a game day is like, you just don't cross his path.
Oh my God, we chatted.
He's very intense.
I got a different hug guy now. I got a hug.
Wow. I don't get hugs.
That's why I'm his favorite. Anywho.
Well, I'm glad that finally happened for you.
Me too. I hope he's listening.
There's no chance he's awake.
God,
but
damn it.
He might be a podcast guy. He might have figured out how to do that in the last couple weeks.
Anyway, Leafs game last night. It was, besides all those things, losing OT to the biggest wagon in the NHL right now.
Yeah, I think like a certified wagon too. Like, okay, we're noticing that the NHL.com page says 9 wins in a row, 10 wins in a row. There's got to be something there, right? Sorry Lindy chants, like there's some definite vibes, the clapbacks at reporters. Things are positive there in New Jersey, but why exactly? How exactly? What exactly is going on there in New Jersey? And then you see it for your own eyes and you think, wow, that is a pretty impressive team. The pace that they played with, the amount of puck pressure, they kind of suffocated the Maple Leafs in that game. And I was thinking against Pittsburgh, because played the Penguins twice in the last, 10 days. I guess a week. It was last Friday, right?
Yes.
I was thinking about, like, that's a glimpse into the future, because it's kind of that core that over time maybe gets slightly worse, but is still really, really good. Like, that could be the Maple Leafs one day, where you keep the band together. Hopefully you have some success, and the Penguins have, and then you're just kind of trying to piecemeal it around, right? And that's what the future could look like for the Maple Leafs. And then the Devils stroll through, and I'm like, wow, that was the past. That was what we kind of used to know and love about the Maple Leafs, where they built it organically. They built it ground up. They built through the draft and young players and all this excitement and all these top-down things to be really, really encouraged about. But then the cost of winning without winning is something the Maple Leafs have dealt with. And you lose some of those pieces. So my advice to Devils fans would be enjoy it, because it's going to happen where you start losing some of those complementary pieces that allow you to play with speed and pace and all that stuff. And then one day you'll be like the Leafs, where you've got Dennis Malgin in lineup and your fingers crossed and you just don't have the depth, because it doesn't last forever. So that felt like the old Leafs, where it was young and dumb and innocent and just highly skilled.
Young and dumb and innocent.
That's what it felt like.
Title of my memoir.
Yeah. There you go.
I loved the Devils last night. It's hard to admit, but they are a four-line, over-the-boards threat.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice when you see your bottom two lines actually have an identity and hard to play against. They have talent throughout the third and fourth line that...
Like, the threat level is always high, right?
Threat level midnight.
Like, it's obviously higher when Brat
and Hughes... You don't
know
that one, do you?
No, I don't. Brat and Hughes are out there, obviously.
Right.
Higher. But it was kind of like Avalanche-esque in that the Avalanche never let you off the hook. It was always fast. It was always pressure-packed. That's what it felt like for the Devils. And we haven't seen the Maple Leafs get dominated like that in a long time. Mm-hmm. 32% expected goals belong to the Maple Leafs.
Look at you with your Corsi.
Well, you know, we could get on here and talk about expected goals every night, but I think it's only valuable when it actually stands out. And last night, the Maple Leafs got dominated by one of the best teams in the NHL right now, just not the team that we expected to be one of the best teams in the NHL right now, but undeniably so. They were lucky to get a point.
They certainly were lucky to get a point, led by Willie Nylander in the final minutes of the game. All right, here's something that I circled. Willie was the best player on the Maple Leafs, or at least nearing the end of that game.
I heard a lot of people say that. I don't think Willie was great last night.
Sorry, maybe the last stretch of the game.
I feel like he was the most noticeable player. I actually think he had not an amazing
How
Willie
about
day.
He performed with speed and finesse and production.
He was impactful.
At the end of the game.
Yes.
That's conversation fair. Point. They put out Marner and Tavares.
To start overtime.
And they lose the game. And Sheldon Keefe.
Yeah.
Post-game was asked about this. I'm not sure. I don't think we have this clip. And he said, well, I wanted to give those guys a chance to start because they didn't get a chance to start last time.
Yeah, yeah. I don't mind him being out there. I will say this, like, the Leafs are disadvantaged at 3-on-3, especially
they can't win
the
an
Devils.
Overtime game unless Robertson scoring a goal.
But, like, we just talked about the speed the Devils play with. John Tavares gets out there in a 3-on-3, and he's not John Tavares anymore. Like, you're not the same guy. What's his strength right now? What does John Tavares do well? Is it speed through neutral zone? No.
Incorrect.
He gets down low. He owns the puck. He bulls people over. He's got that, like, veteran grind on, mm-hmm. where he's dangerous underneath the hash marks, in the slot, behind the net.
That's not how you play 3-on-3 hockey.
That's not how you play 3-on-3 hockey. So I don't expect Sheldon Keefe to never put him out there, but the Leafs are... Without the combination of Nylander, Matthews, Marner, if John Tavares is out there, they got the worst three-man unit.
So why start your 3-on-3 with that when my point was that William Nylander had scored, he's riding this momentum, he was mm-hmm. fast.
I think that's fair, but you got to play them next anyway, and if they just had a long shift, I get it.
I just didn't like the explanation.
The explanation's
like,
terrible.
Yeah. Oh, I just, like, they didn't get a chance last overtime, so we're sharing the ball. It's yeah. like,
the explanation is far worse than the decision,
this isn't,
I think.
Country club charity golf tournament where everyone gets an opportunity. Since you're trying to win a game against a team that's on a 10-game heater.
I like the country club everyone gets an opportunity when it's, like, exclusive, but
yeah, you know what I mean.
But yeah, it's not like it is and it isn't. Like, you have to play Tavares in overtime, I think, but I don't think you have to play him first.
It's such a little thing to nitpick. I just didn't like the post game comment.
I think it's a bad comment. I think there's definitely you have reason to be, like, off put by the comment. I just think that whether it's first or second, Tavares has to be out there. Maybe you don't want him out there against Hughes because Hughes can, you know. He like John Tavares has no chance in a line drive skating competition with Jack Hughes. And when it becomes 3-on-3, the matchup heavily favors Jack Hughes. So I get all that. He's got to play eventually. I hate the explanation, but the fact of the matter is the Leafs in overtime, despite that top end talent, are kind of disadvantaged, especially against Jersey.
So the Leafs beat themselves a little bit out in this game.
I disagree with that.
Well, Luke Fox,
that's what Sheldon Keefe said. I also take issue with that.
I was going to play that.
I don't think they beat himself at all.
Okay.
Go for it.
Luke Fox had a tweet here. Toronto Maple Leafs have 211 giveaways, the most in the National Hockey League. Can you not agree that the goals that were scored were on Maple Leafs brain farts or giveaways?
I guess I got to think about him again. Certainly Tavares' one was. But, like, don't you get credit for creating giveaways, creating turnovers? Don't you get, like, we give credit to OG Anunoby, right? Defensive player of the year. We want to anoint him because he gets all these steals and blocks every day. It's part of our daily wake and rake consideration when the Raptors are playing. We heap praise on him for forcing those turnovers. It's not like we slam whoever the point guard is or whoever the ball handler is mm-hmm. for the opposite team. I think the Devils created those turnovers. I think, yeah, it's been a problem all year long. Luke Fox, I think 211 leads the yes. National Hockey League. That's bad, and there have been issues, but that's an excuse to me. The Devils won that deserved that game. They won that game mm-hmm. with their ability to cause the Maple Leafs problems, especially in the defensive zone. The pressure is what caused those turnovers.
Yes.
In addition to, I don't want to say carelessness, but like maybe just whatever we've seen from Rasmus Sandin all year, which is like the inability to make that smart first touch.
So this is what Keefe said, and I agree with your perspective that you obviously have to give the Devils the most credit, and I do. Like we just talked about how great of a team they are. They look well-rounded. They outplayed the Maple Leafs.
They look like a nightmare to play against.
They're fast. They're young and spry. But
or dumb.
Young, dumb, and spry. Here is Sheldon Keefe post-game with that quote of Leafs were beating themselves.
I thought the difference is that we beat ourselves at times and gave them free goals and they didn't beat themselves at all, which that's how you win 11 in a row. You don't beat yourself. I am concerned about it. I think we have shown here lately that we can win games and we can beat really good teams. I mean, this is the best team in the NHL right now. And despite the fact that we didn't play, for me, we didn't play a great hockey game, but we still get a point and we're right there. That shows what we're capable of, but we got to stop. We got to stop beating ourselves.
Yeah, I don't see it the same way. I mean, you can look at all three goals and be like, yeah, there was a Maple Leaf mistake there. But, and those are the three things that stand out the most. Obviously, it's the reason why you lost the game because the goals matter more than anything else. But I saw a team that couldn't handle the pressure that the Devils put out there. And certainly, yes, mistake made on the first goal. I think it was more of a defensive coverage thing than anything. Yeah, they failed to clear the zone, but that happens sometimes. You got to make up for it, not lose Jesper Bratt, who just scores without anyone in his vicinity. And then, of course, Jordy Benn did get caught up ice on the second goal. But Morgan Riley's transition defense let them down. Like, I don't know what that was. So I think it's in all things. But if you separate the goals, take the goals away from the game, which, again, I know people will scoff at that, it was still 32% for the Maple Leafs compared to 68. And you got that 68 through shift-over-shift dominance and the ability to make life miserable on the Maple Leafs.
Marner on defense.
Yes.
There was a buzz in the arena.
Do not give him the Norris Trophy yet. How many times have we seen that? This is like maybe only
I thought this was the first time.
We saw one earlier.
I thought we saw him in the power play do it. That was different.
He does, well, yeah, you get four forwards on the power play pretty routinely.
This was after the announcement that he would possibly play D and we were.
I think the Marner on D Claxon went off earlier on in the year. I'm pretty sure.
Well, but anyway, certainly not memorable.
This was the most memorable. We'll put it that way because he got absolutely walked. Was it Nico Hischier? Like it was like, oh God, that like let's pump the brakes on positionless hockey a little bit because if Mitch Marner, who is one of the best defensive forwards in the NHL, is going to be beat with that much ease, you got to think a little bit more clearly about what we want here. However, I don't think it's a bad thing to try it just because he got walked. It is, again, in my eyes, a progression to pulling the goalie, and you're going to take more risks at that point. They took some risks. They almost got burned. They did manage to tie the game despite all that.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't because Marner was playing defense. It was because William Nylander got a lucky deflection. But, you know, it's pretty funny how it works out. I just wouldn't be like, oh, Keefe's a moron for doing this.
No. Do you think that this gives you a slight edge of confidence that he's been given the keys to drive this car how he would like? Because I think.
What do you mean he? Keefe?
Keefe. Because putting Mitch Marner.
I think he can do whatever he wants.
All right.
I
thought we talked about him switching up the top four making, you know, impactful lineup decisions because we didn't know if he was really.
No, I mean, I think that's separate. But, I mean, he's made the lineup decisions that he's felt necessary.
I was gonna say, in the last 2 weeks, he's been, let's do this. Like, let me switch this up. Let's put this in a blender. Let's put Mitch Marner on D. Let's start Schalgren back-to-back games.
Maybe there's something there.
We'll have, you know, the core four split up, Bunting on the fourth line. Like, he's done some things that we previously hadn't seen or thought that would be a possibility. So Mitch Marner on D is a massive progression to that.
Yeah, I guess so. I feel like it's kind of separate and it's like just this really specialized thing. It's this late game down one goal thing. but maybe because you've already made the switch that it makes more sense because it frees up Marner outside of Matthews. Like if you're playing the top line, do you want to move Marner off the forward group when he's already connected at the hip with Matthews? I don't know if that played in the decision at all. I think that Keith just realized he was getting dominated. His team was getting dominated. And almost that like, what, in order to get something. A goal, four forwards made the most sense.
Okay. What does Alexander Kerfoot do on the ice?
So I've been trying to like lead a couple of the people we've had on with my questioning lately. I've been trying
be more
to
be direct.
I've been trying to be like, hey, is there anyone else that you think could get dealt? Anyone else stand out? And it usually goes to like Robertson, Sandin, the people that are like trying to break into the lineup. I mean, if there's a way to create cap space beyond Jake Muzzin, I see it through Alexander Kerfoot. And like, he's a useful player. You can put him on any line and
he's
it won't really hurt you.
Hybrid fill-in guys. That's what he's been.
But like, you can't make $3.5 million if you're just a hybrid fill-in guy. Like, you have to have a pretty, you have to have a role with which is built around.
Right now, he's a body.
Like, he's a body.
He's a body that goes out there to give the next body rest and skate around.
Basically, to make sure that like one, that the line has three players and not two. Like, that's kind of where we're
and
at.
You can't be making.
He's not hurting you. He's not hurting you, but he's not helping you. I feel like that's sort of where we're at here with Kerfoot. And
but look how that their lineup was structured. The Devils felt like they didn't have any question marks. Like
no, and they've got some like lesser name players for sure. But you see like pretty consistent impact. Now I guess we're looking at Kerfoot different than we're looking at say Michael McLeod. Like maybe Michael McLeod didn't really do much either for the Devils, but maybe he did. It's just that we're getting to the point now where the cap is the team is. Orchestrated or assembled as such where everyone that makes even a reasonable amount of money has to do a lot for you. And if I see a way for this team to improve, like I think you have to spend Muzzin's money to get another defenseman in. But let's say that defenseman covers half of the Muzzin cost. And that leaves you with still 2.5 from there and maybe 6 million combined if you add the 3.5 with Alex Kerfoot. Like I don't know. We're talking about autonomy issues with Keefe. I don't know about what Dubas has, like how much length he has or how much or length to the leash he has, what he can actually do, what's within his means. But if I'm looking to improve the team, if I see one way to improve the team in a big trade, it's basically bringing in a superior forward to Alex Kerfoot, someone who can play in the middle six forward units, who can give you more impact. And I think if you're making a big trade, it doesn't necessarily have to be for a high-paid defenseman. Mm-hmm. It could be for a high-paid forward and a underpaid defenseman. There's still two buckets that they have to fill in terms of being like a Stanley Cup contender, I think. And it could be three if Matt Murray isn't what we've seen lately or if he's not available. But they still can upgrade a forward, and I think they can do that through Kerfoot. And they still have to upgrade on defense, and we know how they can do that because we don't expect Muzzin to be back. I just think he's the obvious choice. If you're going to salary dump, if you're going to spend a lot, then maybe you can package him with it because if you're spending a lot, generally it doesn't matter if there's a throw-in. And Alexander Kerfoot is in throw-in territory for me right now.
Before we talk about Matt Murray, let me ask the same question. What does Pierre Engvall do on the ice?
Because I guess that's another one.
That is the glaring black hole. When the Maple Leafs skate out onto the ice, I truly am bewildered.
There's not much there. And that's emblematic of the entire third line, right? Like, it's not... This is saying, Kelly Urquhart's not doing anything either.
So this is where I was going. Kerfoot, Engvall, Yarncroc. There's a bunch of guys that just... go out there and our bodies. And that was the biggest difference to be watching those New Jersey Devils. It just felt way more evident when a team is rolling, they jumping over the boards, like line after line, making an impact. And then the Maple Leafs put out a line that you're like, okay, like how long are you going to be out here for?
Yeah. Back to the Michael McLeod thing. Like, okay. Like I don't know the breadth of your game, but when you were on the ice, your line looked fast.
Yeah,
looked faster than the Engvall line.
Somebody's
looked
physical.
Like you were more capable.
Somebody's making back checks and picking up sticks. Like they're doing something.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious that, yeah, they can break even, but they can't give you anything. And break even, maybe it's good enough on a team that has the forwards it does and has a fourth line that is pretty good.
But it's not a Stanley Cup winning team if you have two break even lines.
It doesn't feel like it. It doesn't feel like it. I still think there's fixes there. I still think there's something they can go to. Like, we've literally seen pretty dominant defensive forward units that involved Kampf and Engvall, who don't play together for whatever reason. I guess because they're prioritizing the fourth line.
Your poor guy, Kampf.
I just think there's a lot you can do. And especially, like, if you traded Kerfoot, I think Yarncroke could end up in your top six. And I think you could elevate Kampf, and he could play with Engvall and maybe fix Engvall. Like, I think there's a lot of things they can do. But it does feel like, as they're constructed, they can only give three really good lines, and one of them will be bad.
Yeah.
And right now, I think they're just trying to make four okay lines, two great lines and two okay lines. And I wonder if just, like, I've said this a million times, so I don't want to say it over and over again. I just think they should try to put their best bottom six forward unit together with the best talent and see where it ends up. Because right now they're just like, okay, we're just going to accept. We're going to have a Marley play between Engvall and Yarncroke, and it's just not going to do anything for us. And is that the best way to put your lineup together? I don't think so.
Certainly not. Okay, so pregame, I think another player that has been, you got Engvall, you got Sandin, and Kerfoot in the constant, who do we want the most out of?
Kerfoot gets the benefit of the doubt, though. He's never involved in these conversations.
When I open the text line in the morning, Engvall.
Even with Keefe, though. With Keefe, Engvall has gotten it, and you're about to go to Rasmus Sandin.
Exactly.
He's getting it now.
So, Rasmus Sandin, all his preseason dramatics, comes in, hasn't lived up at all to the expectation that he was going to be better than Timothy Liljegren and demand all more money and be this young stud that we had hoped for. Keefe is obviously frustrated. I think a lot of the fan base is as well. Pre-game, he made this a point of emphasis, just like when Nick Nurse said that him and Precious Achiuwa got in the video room and he needs to be better and he needs to step it up. And I talked to him and I sat him down. Similar wavelength with Keefe going on a little bit of a Sandin dump.
You know, he hasn't, it hasn't blossomed to the point you'd like it to. And you know, I think he's low on confidence at this time. You know, we need to help him, you know, get back to being himself. Confidence is a strength of his, you know, and allows him to play his game and feel good about getting involved offensively. And as that happens, it just naturally you feel better defensively. So spoke with him again here today just about clearing his head and, you know, getting back to being the player that he knows he can be. It hasn't come together for him like a number of our guys here in the early going. You know, it hasn't happened for different reasons, and he's won, but he's got far more to give us here, so we've got to help him find that.
I mean, I think that's encouraging enough. I think he could have got like, oh, he didn't like if it was Tortorella or Babcock, it would have been like, well, he didn't come to training camp on time, and that's the sort of thing that happens, right? Like, it could have been a little messier. I think that is, you're right, the Achiuwa thing, where it's like, we had a conversation, and I'm going to take this conversation to the media, whether or not it was unprovoked or not, or prompted or not. Like, did someone ask him about Sandin?
I don't know how that line of questioning went.
Probably, but, like, he would choose consciously to share that information, which he did. I just think it's all fair. I think these guys are not above criticism, and it's easy to cherry pick. Like, okay, it's cherry pick the Crosby giveaway, and there were giveaways against the Devils as well. I think that's what he's struggling with, and it feels more fixable than, let's say, Justin Hall's hijinks with the puck at times, right? Like, Sandin is a good puck handler.
Yeah.
He actually might be the best option for the power play. It's just that, well, we paid Morgan Riley all this money, so we put him out there. I don't think, like, it could be a confidence issue. It could very well be just, like, he's not feeling it right now. He's not thinking the game like he was. He's a step behind for whatever reason. And Keefe laid it out. Confidence is usually a strength for him. Right now, it seems like a detriment.
Okay, one more on the Leafs before we move to Canada soccer and a little bit of Blue Jays rumors, possibly. I like Matt Murray right now. Two-game sample size. He's doing everything he needs right now to help this team win. As I said, two-game sample
battling.
Size. He's battling.
He's playing hard.
He is playing hard. It seems like sometimes he has to do a lot more. He's been put in a lot of situations where he's shouldering a lot of this team. That's what happens when you're a goaltender. But I must say, I'm a little bit cautiously optimistic with Matt Murray's return. Saying that, it doesn't sound like Samsonov is... He's maybe another week or two away. I don't really know how you evaluate close, but not really. Leafs had a day off today. They played the Sabres on Saturday. Another day off. And then the Islanders, another day off. Then the Devils. So I don't know.
We're into every other territory.
Every other territory until next weekend when there's a back-to-back.
Shulgin's probably got to play one more. Is it Saturday? I guess we'll see how Matt Murray's feeling. I guess my only thing with Murray is like when an athlete is performing really well, what do we say sometimes? Makes it look easy.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Murray's not making it look easy.
That's what you meant by he's grinding.
He's making it look like really, really laborious. You know what I mean? Like it looks really difficult. Like he's like the sweat is just
flailing a little bit.
Flailing, like really working hard to do what he needs to
do. I wonder if that's because he was out for a little while. I know that's an excuse, but I don't know. I don't know. I was never a goaltender.
And was that what he looked like before?
I don't remember
that, but I also don't remember him looking like a giant like he does now. Like, so it's tough to like compare because it feels like worlds ago when he was actually playing at a high level.
Something to
which is interesting.
Chew on, keep
but
looking.
He also looks slow. You know what I mean? And that's not like necessarily a big deal, but he looks like his movements are, maybe this is intentional. His movements are a little bit more delayed.
Calculated.
They require a little extra effort. And again, that might be an optics thing rather than anything else. That may not be the case, but when you watch him, it's not like, oh, that's a clearly plus athlete moving around with ease. That's a big guy trying to make it work. That's what it feels like to me.
As I said, Leafs day off. We'll see. Obviously, I think Shulgin will get in the lineup in the next couple of days. I don't think you want to put Matt Murray in all of these, especially with him coming off injury and the concerns that how many games can he play before the past becomes the present? Okay. Yesterday we were on the air when Canada kicked off against Japan. They ended up winning 2-1 over Japan in their final tune-up game.
We should have kept it to both teams score. Both teams score.
It's all right. We got greedy. 2-1 win over Japan in Dubai, their last tune-up before they play in a matter of days, Wednesday. Cafe Diplomatico.
Get ready.
We'll be there Wednesday morning. We'll be doing the show live from Cafe Dip. 4-hour show. Come and hang out.
Just nonstop espresso.
Grab a couple spros.
Yeah.
Join us. We'll talk about that next week. But Canada did this without two of their key playmakers. I don't really know what our expectations were. Japan's a better ranked team. They're pretty good. They're decent.
But didn't play their best players as well.
Didn't play their best players. Anyway, I will say the biggest positive out of this is you play a friendly or a tune-up game and nobody gets removed from the roster permanently.
Nobody gets removed from the roster permanently. A little maybe confidence boost beating a team that normally does quite well at this tournament, which is all great things. We didn't watch it because we were just done. We had a little meeting. Like we weren't able to watch this game. But all signs point to things being positive in the final tune-up. You're hearing more and more of the, oh, will Davies be ready thing? And I'm getting a little, not concerned, not annoyed, but just like, I'm kind of almost resigned to the idea that he's not even going to be.
You think it's like 90, mind games?
Maybe 90, I don't know. But like we're hearing it from Canadian broadcasters, so it's just like,
Everyone's bought into it.
I just feel like if we're not going to get 90 minutes from Davies, it's going to be just so disappointing. And we might not even get him starting. We might get him coming like only 45 minutes. I don't know what we're going to get from Davies, but it feels a little bit less certain that he's going to be healthy. And I guess that's my biggest issue. But again, positives to take from beating Japan, sure.
We're going to talk to James Sharman, our Sportsnet soccer analyst and founder of Sharman's Proper Pies at 7:30. It'll be the first big tee up for us. Looking at the World Cup, we've got Elliot Friedman, the man, the myth, the legend at 8 a.m. And then obviously Charles Davis, best friend of the show at 7.
It's a big show.
It's a massive show. Quickly touching on our other guy, who's basically the fourth member of this show, if we add Charles in, John Morosi.
Yes.
I don't know if we live rent-free down there in his head, but he provides every single tidbit of information on the Blue Jays, and thank God for him. Like, he's got his...
He's a national guy, but is he, like, semi-regional?
It feels I looked at his Twitter feed.
Like, he's obviously on the Tigers, but he's got the Blue Jays on lock, too. I think he just must have good sources.
A quarter of his tweets seem to be about the Blue Jays.
Really? Blue Jays are one of those teams that are involved in, like, everything, it seems like, and they're kind of used this time of year sometimes by big agents who want to put their clients' names in people's mouths. But it does feel like the Jays are involved, and it feels like Morosi's got his finger on the pulse of everything.
All right, this is what John Morosi tweeted yesterday. And first of all, I don't know how long Twitter's going to be around for. That's a whole other story, but this might be his last tweet.
I'll say, if it does die, last night was like a decent farewell because it was actually hilarious. Entertaining on Twitter yesterday.
I don't even know how to get into the Twitter drama, but this is what he tweeted 18 hours ago. The Blue Jays are one team to watch on Cody Bellinger if he is non-tendered, which, by the way, would be today. They are known to have interest in also free agent Brandon Nimmo, who we've talked about the last 4 days. The Jays want to add a left-handed bat in the outfield, and Rogers Center is a great place to revive one's offensive numbers. Now, Brandon Nimmo, Cody Bellinger, Kevin Kiermaier, I think there's been a few guys. But Cody Bellinger is an interesting one. I wrote in the doc, the Jimmy G debate.
Okay, tell me.
You weren't on the show.
You got to explain that.
When this debate became a thing. It's the handsome guy syndrome. Is he good or is he just handsome?
And who's handsome?
Cody Bellinger.
Is he?
I don't know. He's got a little bit of something.
I feel like he looks like he's high at all times.
Well, it's because of his eyes.
I guess, so, but is that like an attract? I don't know.
I'm just saying.
Jimmy G doesn't look high at all
times.
It's
certainly a consideration, obviously. He's been good.
I think Kiermaier's better looking, personally.
I know.
I'm a Kiermaier guy.
Out of these two, I'll be happy.
I don't even know what Brandon Nimmo looks like, to be honest with that.
Don't put him in the same.
Okay.
Okay, so yeah, between the two of them, we could be really upgrading this lineup. Okay, so today they have the opportunity to go to arbitration or non-tender Cody Bellinger. Obviously, he's a lefty. Big thing that they need. He has a wonderful debut as a big leaguer. He's now 27 years old, and the last two seasons have been mighty disappointing. Before the last two seasons, two All-Star selections, one MVP, one Rookie of the Year, 33 home runs in 162 games. He broke the NL record for home runs. But then he had some injury issues. He's had some consistency issues, and now we're in the spot where he might be non-tendered by his team after having an incredible start to his big league career.
MVP a couple years ago.
MVP a couple years ago might
not be. Rookie of the Year, you mentioned debut. Can't do much better than Rookie of the Year.
Last year, a .210 batting average. And in 2021, a .165 batting average.
Yeah.
He had almost dead last in OPS.
And his career changed after suffering an injury?
Yeah, he had shoulder surgery, fractured leg. Some things have happened, certainly, but he just hasn't come back to Cody Bellinger.
So I like the spirit of the idea. And I do agree with Morosi saying, what better way to get back on track offensively but to play in Rogers Center? Like, I guess I see that. Maybe there are other places. It's not like it's, you know, not a house of horrors everywhere else. He's probably not going to be running to Baltimore, but whatever. but I don't mind the idea because it's the alternative. I don't think that they should spend big money on Brandon Nimmo.
I really don't. Chunk of change.
He's going to be the guy that goes, like, he's going to be the premier position guy that's going to go for the largest ticket. And I think it's going to be the guy who is way overvalued, not only immediately, but like in a couple years, it's bad.
He's almost 30 and he's had the same issues that, like, he hasn't played all of his games out in center field. Like, he's had some issues as well.
He's not a refined product by any means. His most redeeming quality is getting on base, and that's something the Blue Jays need more of, obviously, but I just don't know if that's the perfect fit. Yeah, he checks a lot of the boxes, but I think the worst part of that equation would be, okay, I'm going to tie up a bunch of money 4, 5, 6 years. What are you going to leave money for Bo and Manoah? And Vladdy. Like, I don't think you can make that investment right now. I just don't think that's the best thing to do. I'd rather go with the roll of the dice. And maybe it's not Bellinger. I kind of think Kevin Kiermaier would be the best. Yeah, he doesn't fix what ails you offensively.
He fixes a lot of
Yeah, I'm going to go actually, in terms of looks, I'm just going to, that's my power rankings. The looks power rankings is my desirable power rankings for on-field stuff too. Because I just don't, yeah, he's sort of middle ground there. You can't 1 year prove it with Kevin Kiermaier, I don't think. But you, if you're going to reallocate strengths, and that's part of this offseason for the Blue Jays, how about prioritizing elite outfielding? That would get you a step in the right direction. A lefty bat puts you in a step in the right direction. And then somewhere else, figure out a way to get more of that Teo absence filled, whether it's through trading one of the catchers, relying more on Alejandro Kirk in that 4-6 range in the batting order. I just feel like Nimmo would be a mistake.
Nimmo is so much money for a guy that's going to be 30.
Creating more problems before you solve your current ones.
Not that Cody Bellinger is young and spry and dumb. What was it that you called him?
Young and dumb.
Young and dumb, but...
He might be dumb.
He kind of looks like he could be dumb.
He might, yeah.
He's 27. It's not a huge significant difference, but he'll be cheaper and he's got...
I'd roll the dice with him.
I would rather...
You can put
well.
Him in the middle of the order, protect him a little bit, protect the others. If he doesn't have the greatest batting average, that's okay. If he hits a couple bombs... It would be a step back from Teo, but at least it would be the left-hander to change up the lineup. And he is, we should say, if we're talking about Kiermaier's defense being in, you know, one of the more redeeming qualities, one of the things you value, Bellinger, despite everything else, is still an elite center fielder.
And that's the only reason he's been in the lineup. Because, and when he wasn't in the lineup, the quotes were, he was benched this season. And it was, he needs a reset. He's just not mentally there yet.
Like, it's just not going to work in Dodger land. They're too good.
No.
They got someone
They have enough players where you're like,
exactly.
You can't be benching Cody Bellinger and keeping him on this roster. Like, we got next guy up mentality.
Yeah.
So they're lucky in that opportunity to have possibly to non-tender a former MVP.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean that his career's over, though.
No.
It means that his career's over in Los Angeles.
Come on over.
I think the low risk, high reward is where the Blue Jays should be going here. Because... You only have so much money, and there are so many other things you have to fix. How about just pitching better? How about spending money on pitching?
There's a lot of things on this wish list in the holiday season.
So you're going to find out what you got to do it value way at some point. And maybe Bellinger's a former MVP could be value.
Let us know. Text line 590-590. You ain't on Cody Bellinger? You want Brandon Nimmo? You want to roll the dice or you want to put the bag on the table? While you're at it, send in your wake and rake selections as well. We were close.
We were sniffing around yesterday.
We have been sniffing around all week.
If we just stopped playing parlays, we'd probably be a profitable show. But the wake and rake is a parlay. The fade Calgary went well.
Oh, speaking of fade Calgary, if you missed the end of yesterday's show when the 960 squad put our number out on the text line and started the war
inviting
of...
Inviting takes...
Oh, yeah.
Shots, pot shots.
It wasn't just text 590-590. It was text 590-590 with outrageous leaf chirps and daggers to the heart. Go and rub salt in their wound. And so with that being said, we're going to have those guys on the air later in the show, and we're going to hash this out.
Yeah, we're going to see what prompted this unprovoked attack.
960.
And we're probably going to relish the fact that we predicted that the Flames would have a tough one in Tampa.
Faded them.
And they did.
I love it. That's later in the show. Send in your wake and rake. We're going to take a break and we're going to do the A-list on this beautiful Friday morning in my elegant dress. I'd like a glass of Prosecco for the A-list. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Happy Friday. Are you feeling like you might be under the weather? You have the sniffles. It's mid-November. It's starting to get cold. Justin wore an actual jacket to work today. I think that it's time to be cautious about your health. And the first item in their A-list here might actually assist you with such a thing.
Now, it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Ravens cornerback Marlon Humphrey. He's had a pretty good start to the season. 35 tackles, 2 interceptions, fumble recovery. But what he's going to be maybe the most known for as the last month, and which we might miss, is athletes tweeting. It's going to be tough to know what they're thinking.
Do you think Twitter's dead?
I don't know. It's hard to unpack, and Elon Musk is off the walls.
I just can't see it.
Anyway, Marlon Humphrey tweeted this yesterday. If you're sick, sleep with an onion in your sock.
Okay. This is that it?
Yeah.
That's the tweet? That's the tweet?
Yeah, put an onion in your sock and it should help if you're feeling sick.
You have to wear the sock, right?
No, you put it in your drawer and
sock beside
somehow
you.
It magically heals you.
I kind of believe in this stuff. Like, you can find any which way to, you know, I don't know what the proper term is, like sort of any old school traditions from different cultures. They do different things. I kind of believe in all that stuff.
Okay.
I think there's something to it. My issue, though, is I cannot sleep with socks on. In fact, my feet can't be touching anything for me to sleep.
What are they, like, out at the end of the bed?
They're out at the end of the bed. I need unfiltered, pure airflow to my feet, or wow. I'm not getting any sleep.
Interesting.
So that I have no chance here. And I don't even like onions, so this is like a double.
Okay, well, you're never trying this, but I thought it would spark a good text line inquiry. Is what is your home remedy if
home
you're
remedy,
sick?
That's what the right thing
home
is.
Home remedy, because my mother, anytime I'll be like, I've got an ear infection, stick a garlic clove in your ear.
It's always garlic or onions.
It's garlic. My mother must be the lead fund of garlic.
The lead fund of garlic?
I don't know. I think she grows garlic. This lady is the garlic queen. Every time there's something, I have a stomach ache, eat garlic cloves. Bloody nose, stick a garlic up there. That's exaggeration. But garlic, 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 garlic. And I must, like, she's a whole wives' tale, but it works.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that we're going to have a lot of text in here about ways that you heal a little cough, a little headache, aches and pains. Let me know. And we'll just put them in a file and we'll know when, you know, mid-December rolls around and good sniffles, what to do.
Basically, the starting point to any recipe is what you need for your home remedies, whether it's garlic or onions. Do you think he does onions all through winter? Or at least through the football season to make sure that he's at his best on the field?
I'll keep an eye on
this. Anyway, that's a commitment.
It is.
Would stink, though.
Yeah, just awful. Joel, I think garlic is more potent than onion. If it's like in your ear, like a garlic clove in your ear and you're trying to sleep, would just reek. At least the onion's down at the bottom.
Until you chop the garlic, it doesn't have a scent, does it? I guess it does.
Okay, we're already getting texts in. I'll read those after. Okay, so last one here before we take a break and talk to Charles Davis. The Browns-Bills game was moved to Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Because 4 to 6 feet of snow is expected to hit Buffalo.
Isn't it being called thunder snow?
Thunder snow.
What's thunder snow?
I don't know. I'm scared as hell. Thunder snow.
That is terrifying. Thunder snow.
Thunder snow. So they moved it to Ford Field in Detroit.
Like, make sure your shovel isn't metal.
Which to me is, yeah.
You need a wood-handled shovel.
You really gotta get ready for thunder snow. Bundle up. But unfortunately, there's a indoor carnival on Ford Field right now. A full-on carnival.
Mm.
So they're going to have to clear that thing out, get it ready for Browns-Bills on Sunday. And you know what? I'm going to say, I don't really love that the Bills lost the home field advantage to go to Detroit.
Why?
Because I love...
What if this was the day you were supposed to go?
That's what I'm saying.
A couple weeks.
I feel... What if the fans had booked hotel rooms? What if you decided I'm going to go to Buffalo this weekend? I'm going to have a nice old time. I got my hotel. I got my tailgate ready. And now it's like, quick turnover to Detroit.
So you do feel bad.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I hate this.
I thought you said you were happy about it.
Are you nuts?
No, it's not good.
It sucks. I think it also sucks for the Bills.
I think if the Bills wanted to embrace the thunder snow, they should have got that option.
If any team knows how to play in the thunder snow, it could be the Bills.
If it's real messy, then
6 feet of snow would be hilarious.
Didn't they get dominated by the, not dominated, but the Patriots beat them on that day where no one could throw the football? Like Mac Jones literally didn't throw a pass, I think, and they beat them.
Whatever. They've played in snow a lot and
Maybe Josh. Maybe Josh Allen Ford Field's the better thing. Maybe it's the better idea.
So having a carnival on Ford Field.
Carnival or circus? Because I'm always amazed.
Indoor carnival.
I'm always amazed by how quickly they can turn over these things. But if there's like elephants involved, then it's going to be tough.
I can't update you on the elephant. I'm sure there's horses, your least favorite animal in the world.
Nah, I like a horse. I just think horses do one thing especially well.
There's pathetic horses that are lazy and bums at the carnival. They just lay there. Anyway, indoor carnival at Ford Field is not something new.
No. Insert joke there. You nailed it.
Boom, boom. All right, let's take a break because our favorite, Charles Davis, joins us after the break. He's calling Eagles-Colts this Sunday. Hell of a game. Jeff, Saturday, looking to continue to be the most prolific.
You did a 180 on Saturday. You hated Saturday a week ago.
I love Saturday. I've always loved him.
You hated him a week ago. Now you love him for some reason.
Ever in the history of fandom.
See if Charles Davis has turned around on Saturday as well.
That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Justin and Ailish, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.